was funny. I don't know. That feels like it needs to become a podcast or something. I'm not really sure what all I just said, but was that helpful at all? Okay, great. All right. Well, let's get started, shall we? I'm so glad we have a small group tonight. It'll be so intimate and fun. I want to share my second screen. Thank you. Welcome to Expand. Let's talk about how to expand to hold more. All right. Oh shit, menu, don't move over there. Stop doing that. Okay. Nope, I don't want that either. Oh my God, all the buttons. Okay. So now I'm going to tell you my favorite music. Any Dave Matthews, Tim Reynolds fans in the house? Is that just me? Okay, I also like 90s pop, girl country, chill spiritual shit, Norse heathenry music. Anybody like Norse? I think you like Norse heathenry music, don't you, Danielle? Do you know about a band called Wardruna? Oh, you would like, if you like Norse heathen music, you would like it. Wardruna. Yeah. And then Scottish Gaelic and Celtic folk music because that is my heritage. As you know by now, I'm not a licensed healthcare provider, so don't use this to solve your medical shit. Go get checked out. Please don't steal my shit. We know all the things. This is our fourth workshop. So we have two more after this. Our group coaching call is next week, Wednesday, October 16th at 1 p.m. Central Time. The next workshop is on Thursday, October 10th. It is called Resilient. And it is about building resiliency to navigate a stressful world by taking radical responsibility for yourself, using your agency, and setting boundaries with self and others. Because guess what? Your personal responsibility, agency, and boundaries with self and others are how you keep the expansion protected. You have to protect it, right? We can't just leave it hanging out for God knows what. We have to protect it. Okay. So, what is our window of tolerance? This is a concept that was developed by Dr. Dan Siegel. It describes the optimal zone of arousal for a person to function in everyday life. We are more able to manage our emotional state when we are inside of our window of tolerance. The state of your nervous system is what determines what you are able to tolerate. So, the state of your nervous system is determining what is inside or outside your window of tolerance. Here is an example, if you like visuals, of what a window of tolerance is. So, whatever is inside the black square is within your window of tolerance. That's what feels safe. That's what feels comfortable. That's what feels familiar. It's great. What's outside of the black square, that's where our triggers live. That's what feels uncomfortable, unsafe, not okay, unfamiliar. When you're inside your little comfort zone, safely tucked away in the middle of your window of tolerance, you feel safe and grounded, open, flexible. Present, curious, emotionally regulated, alert but not anxious, calm but not tired. And you can take full breaths, think clearly, make sound decisions, make eye contact, hold multiple perspectives and realities, access your intuition and self-trust, use your agency and self-responsibility, communicate calmly and clearly. Kind of sounds like a safe and social ventral vagal state, doesn't it? Because it is. That's the ventral vagal state, right smack in the middle of the comfort zone. Everything feels lovely. It is perfectly normal for your window of tolerance to change, to expand and contract based on the state of your nervous system at that time. And as you know, the state of your nervous system changes sometimes multiple times throughout the day. So your window of tolerance could change throughout the day. For example, your window of tolerance might be smaller when you're sick. I don't know about you guys, but if I get sick, my anxiety goes through the roof. Even if I haven't had any anxiety in months and months and months, I'll get sick and all of a sudden it's like heart palpitations and anxiety for whatever reason. My window of tolerance gets smaller. If you didn't sleep well the night before, if you're more tired than usual, more fatigued, that can make your window of tolerance smaller. If you're going through a bout of insomnia, if your primary intimate relationship is experiencing some conflict or confusion or disconnection, that can make your window of tolerance smaller because there's just kind of like an underlying level of unease when something like that is going on, which can make you more sensitive. If you spend too much time scrolling on your phone or watching the news, Or my window of tolerance is definitely smaller when I am hangry. Anybody else's window of tolerance gets smaller when they're hangry? Okay, so see, and that's just like at one point throughout the day, right? And then you eat and you're like, oh my God, I can hold more now, right? Your window of tolerance can also change slightly from day to day, even throughout the day. It can fluctuate depending on who you're with and what the level of safety is in that relationship. It can change depending on where you're at in your menstrual cycle if you're still menstruating. I'm not going to tell you how to make your window of tolerance bigger and keep it that way. Because if your window of tolerance gets smaller, that is your body's wisdom. And we are not going to override your body's wisdom. When your body is like, nope, it's too much, keep everything else out except for this, there's wisdom in that. And we have to honor that, not push through it to try to make it bigger. Your body is so smart, but your body doesn't operate in the realm of nuance the way that your logical mind can operate in the realm of nuance. Your body doesn't see the gray. Your body is only life and death. So, whatever you can or can't tolerate is just information. It's neutral data from your body. You don't have to make it mean anything. You don't have to compare yourself to other people. It just is information about you, and it's not set in stone. Like, it can change. You can start to tolerate more. Then you might have a period where you tolerate less. It's like an ever expanding and contracting living thing. Widening your window of tolerance is an ongoing process of expansion and contraction. So, if you'll remember back to high school physics, Newton's third law states that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. For every expansion, there is a contraction. Many of us, though, want all of the expansion and none of the contraction because that's uncomfortable. This is not only unrealistic, it is physically and energetically impossible. Like, the laws of physics will not allow us to be in a constantly expanding state. But that's also good news for when you're in a contraction because the laws of physics also won't allow you to be in a constantly contracting state. Many people do expansive things only to then later find out, usually with a big spank from their nervous system, that it was not within their window of tolerance. And when they have a big reaction because they were way outside their window of tolerance, then they often judge themselves or they judge whatever they did. So I tried it. It didn't work. It's not for me. If I had done that right, I wouldn't feel this way. Anytime I try something new, this, whatever the bad thing is, always happens. And if you'll remember, you have a reticular activating system who is always busily scanning your environment, looking for evidence that what you believe about yourself or about the world is true. So, if you have a belief about yourself that you can't take risks, you can't try new things, it's too scary, it's too unsafe, it never works out whenever you do, then that is information your brain is holding on to that is also keeping your window of tolerance small because it's keeping you stuck in those beliefs. And so if you try an expansive thing and it doesn't work out, then that becomes proof. Oh, it doesn't ever work out for me. I tried it. It never works. Anytime I try something new, this bad thing happens. So therefore, I can't try anything new. We have to be really, really conscious of those sneaky beliefs like that. Just because you do an expansive thing and then feel the resulting contraction doesn't mean the expansive thing was bad or it was the wrong thing or it wasn't for you or that you did it wrong. Just because it doesn't turn out the way you think it's supposed to doesn't mean you did the wrong thing or that the thing was wrong for you. Often, when we experience a contraction, it just brings up feelings and trauma that we're still carrying. Like it mirrors to us where we still have self-doubt, where we are still not being our authentic selves, where we are still judging ourselves, where we still hold shame, where we still hold fear. How else would we be aware of these lingering feelings and potentially unresolved traumas unless we had that contraction to show us, like, hey, here's this thing that's still here. Right. And you need this experience to have a spotlight on it, to feel it, because you can't do anything about it unless you can feel it. So the contraction is actually really necessary. And we can make the absolute best right decision for us, and it can still have consequences. And that doesn't mean it was the wrong choice. Right. Like that's part of the nuance of decision making is knowing that even if it has consequences, it can still be the right choice. Contraction is so necessary and it really is a gift, even though it doesn't feel like it. Simply by doing expansive things, which may be outside your window of tolerance right now, we initiate ourselves into our own deeper parts and we get to heal on an even deeper level. And the real flex is when you move through the contraction and all the accompanying self-doubt, fear, second-guessing, shame that comes with it without staying stuck in it. Because we aren't meant to stay in expansion either. So as you're widening and expanding your window of tolerance and you feel those resulting contractions, just notice. Notice the voice in your head that says you did the wrong thing or that you weren't following your intuition or you made the wrong decision or it just wasn't for you or like whatever. That's just part of the contraction. Self-doubt is part of the contraction after expansion. Like it is so normal when you launch something new into the world, especially if you're a business owner or something, like you launch something new into the world and you feel so good about it when you launched into the world. But then like the second you put something out there, the second guessing immediately comes in, right? It's like, oh, why did I make that post? Should I take it down? You know, or like, oh, I'm just cringing that I said that thing. I'll just delete the video, you know, or whatever. But like, that's just part of the contraction because you just did an expansive thing. So you have to learn not to allow the contraction to take over and take away from the expansion that's happening. You have to learn how to ride out the contraction. The contraction isn't punishment, and it doesn't mean that you aren't healing or that you've regressed or that you made the wrong decision or like anything like that. That is not what the contraction means at all. Although sometimes, to borrow from my teacher, Kirby, the contractions often feel like a very painful cosmic spanking. That is my favorite phrase for a contraction. It is a cosmic spanking. Contraction is part of expansion. Expansion is part of contraction. Widening your window of tolerance is a dance between these equal and opposite reactions. So be aware of your contraction when you're in it. Notice the stories that the voice in your head is telling you about it. Feel it. And you will move through it into an expansive state again. Like I promise, the laws of physics will not allow you to stay in a contraction because for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So now let's talk about your window of tolerance and your nervous system. So once again, here is our cute little ladder. By the end of this, I really want you to have it like so memorized that you could like explain this as a visual to someone on an elevator. Or something like that you could tell them about their nervous systems in 90 seconds. So here's our ladder. Of course, the red bracket indicates nervous system states that we can potentially find ourselves outside of our window of tolerance. So when you're outside your window of tolerance, it is because you are either hyper aroused or hypo aroused. What's the difference between nervous system dysregulation and hyper or hypo arousal? I have made this cute little graphic to try to show you the difference. So in the very center, that's your safe, cozy comfort zone. And then right at the edge of that safe, cozy comfort zone is where dysregulation lives. It's like where the low level, like I'm feeling something, something's happening. Hyper and hypo arousal is when you're like triggered as fuck. Okay. It's like big. And that I don't necessarily mean like big reaction. It's hyper arousal. If you have a big angry reaction, because that's hyper arousal in the nervous system, it's hypo arousal. If your big reaction is like, you know, you're slammed in bed for 5 days with chronic pain because you did something that you knew would flare you up. You know what I mean? Like that's what I mean by hyper and hypo arousal. It's like, it's a big reaction. So hyper arousal feels like anger and rage, being out of control, hostile, anxiety, panic, hypervigilance, sleeplessness, an exaggerated startle response, emotional flooding, not being able to wind down, being overstimulated, and digestive issues, especially if your digestion is moving very quickly. So like if you eat a meal and you immediately have to go to the bathroom because your bowels are just emptying that quickly, like that can be a sign that your nervous system is in a state of hyperarousal. Or if you have like chronic diarrhea or something, it's just like everything's moving so quickly because your nervous system is like hyper aroused. Whereas hypoarousal, your digestive system will do the opposite. So like your motility will slow down because everything in your body is sort of like immobilizing, and then you can get really constipated. Also, hyperarousal feels like dissociating, utter exhaustion, chronic fatigue, emotional deadness, being really flat, needing to sleep all the time, feeling disoriented, frozen, numb, zoned out, spaced out, little or no appetite, constipated. That is what hypoarousal feels like. Kind of feels like extended burnout. All right. One of my favorite metaphors for the nervous system is that it is like a bucket because it has to hold everything in your life. So it has to hold your childhood, any toxic food you've eaten, when you don't get enough sleep, any toxic relationships, whatever is happening or activating in you when you're scrolling, when you're sick, when you're in pain, when you drink, when you use drugs, when you don't have free time, whatever you're perceiving around you that may or may not be an actual threat. Your nervous system is holding all of it, literally. It's like a bucket that's like, if there was a leak in your ceiling and the leak is trauma and shitty food and scrolling and pain and drugs and alcohol and no free time and perceiving everything as a threat. Like if that's the ceiling leaking and the bucket's underneath the ceiling catching all of it, like at some point you gotta like fix the leak in ceiling, or you gotta like bail some water out of the bucket to like create more room again, right? Otherwise, eventually it's gonna spill all over the floor. So when the bucket is getting close to reaching its capacity before it is overflowed, that's how you can think of like dysregulation. And then when the bucket gets filled and there's no more capacity and it spills all over the place, that's how you can think of like hyper and hypoarousal. So hopefully that's another helpful way of thinking about it. Now let's talk about nervous system states and emotions and your window of tolerance. So we have our polyvagal ladder here with our nervous system states, and you will notice that each nervous system state has a corresponding primary emotion, or energy. So the primary energy of being at the top of the ladder inside your happy window of tolerance is safety. The primary emotion of the combined state of play, which is sympathetic fight with the safety of the social engagement system, is the emotion of joy. The primary emotion of the fight response is anger. The primary emotion of the flight response is perseverance. Freeze response is judgment, and shutdown or collapse is shame. And we're going to talk about each one of those, each of these four, since I think we already know pretty much about this stuff up here. But we would like to understand these things better. So before we go further, I just want you to keep in mind that all emotion is energy in motion. Emotion is just energy. It's neither good nor bad. It's neutral. We are the ones who give emotions meaning, that they do not inherently hold meaning. And the meaning that we give emotions is going to be filtered through our beliefs, our conditioning, our trauma. Like all of that is what is informing how we judge something. So that's why two people can go through the same experience and one of them comes out of it and they judge it as like the greatest experience ever. And another person is like, that was the worst experience ever, right? It's because they're each seeing through their own filter that's uniquely programmed to them. But on their own, emotions are literally just neutral energy that is moving. That's all. So sensation and feeling tells us if we're safe, dysregulated, or hypoaroused. The line between dysregulation and hypo and hyperarousal is blurry and different from person to person. So I just want you to notice if there's a sneaky little voice that's like, but how will I know the difference? What's the line between the two? How am I going to know? Tell me when I'm dysregulated and tell me when I'm hyper or hypoaroused. That line's blurry and it's different from each person. It can change depending on what's happening at in your life at any one time, how much sleep you've had, the level of intimacy in a relationship, because sometimes more intimacy in a relationship actually means your nervous system is going to get more dysregulated if intimacy feels like a threat. It might mean you get more hypervigilant if your deepening intimacy triggers like an abandoned, anxiously attached little one inside of you, right? So your window of tolerance, what sends you over the edge from being slightly dysregulated to like hyper aroused might differ from day to day, depending on what the state of that relationship is and what part of you is triggered at any time. Weather and the time of year can have something to do with it. I definitely feel less resilient, and more easily overwhelmed in the wintertime because I need like sunlight. Sunlight helps me feel not overwhelmed. So less sunlight, it just, for whatever reason, it just feels more overwhelming for me. That doesn't mean I'll be hyper aroused or hypo aroused all winter long. It just means that without the sun, that's just one factor that contributes to how much capacity I have. So to simplify things for tonight, we're going to study each of those four nervous system states, keeping in mind that dysregulation is normal. The goal is not, I'm trying to heal my nervous system so I never ever get dysregulated ever again, because dysregulation is your body's protective mechanism. It's wise, it's necessary. We're not trying to make it go away. We just want dysregulation to be appropriate and proportionate to the threat that's in front of us. But chronic dysregulation is an indicator that an emotion is not integrated. When we have unintegrated emotions, those emotions are often outside our windows of tolerance and will throw us into hyper or hypo arousal because we don't know what to do with that energy. Anything that dysregulates us or throws us into hyper or hypo arousal is always energy. It's never a thing. It's the energy that we feel from the thing. It's not the person. It's the person's energy or the energy they're throwing at us or using when they speak to us or something like that. So, sympathetic activation. This is the nervous system state of fight. The primary energy of this state is anger. So when we're dysregulated, right outside, kind of on the edge, we can be irritable, frustrated, controlling, bullying, condescending. When that fight response gets really fucking big, hyper arousal, that's when we have like chaotic emotional responses, aggression, rage, violence, being abusive, being out of control, demanding other people, threatening other people. The same energy that you need to be raging and abusive and totally out of control is the exact same energy that you need to set boundaries and assert yourself and have courage and motivation and drive and leadership and be able to protect yourself or others if necessary. Same energy. It's just how are you channeling it? If you can channel it into a boundary and assertiveness, then you have integrated that emotion because when that energy comes in, you know what to do with it. If you don't know what to do with the energy of anger when it comes in, then often you are going to throw your hot potato of anger on someone else because you're like, I don't know how to hold this. Okay. In our relationships, the energy of anger serves to let us know when our boundaries have been crossed and when we might need to step in to protect and defend another or ourselves. When it's not integrated and not met with awareness, the energy of anger is outside our windows of tolerance. We don't know what to do with it. We are unable to hold the energy of anger without hurting ourselves or someone else. So the anger becomes like a hot potato. We can't hold it because it's too hot. So we throw it at someone else and it ends up hurting them. When we have unintegrated anger and we have judgment or shame about our anger, we also can't hold the charge of anger. So we collapse. Anything you have judgment or shame about when it comes to energy, you will not be able to hold. That judgment won't let you be able to hold it. The judgment is what is keeping it away, right? You have to drop the judgment and the shame about it in order to be able to hold it. We also collapse because we repress or silence or stop our own anger. We do that because we feel judgment or shame about it. And if our anger cannot be discharged in service of bringing us back to safety through self-defense, defense of others, or setting boundaries, we'll collapse into immobilization. Because remember, your fight flight response is your body's primary defense mechanism. It only downshifts into a dorsal vagal parasympathetic state of shutdown or freeze whenever it determines that the fight flight energy that's going out isn't working in service of survival. So then it has nowhere to go but down the ladder. So if you are repressing your own anger, not allowing yourself to use your voice, not allowing yourself to speak up for yourself and set boundaries, like then you literally, there's, it's no wonder you don't feel safe because you need anger in order to be able to do that. And you're closer to safety when you're angry than you are when you're collapsed, just by looking at the ladder, right? The difference between the two is astonishingly different. when you are able to hold the charge and channel that anger where you need it to go, then you can assert yourself calmly and firmly. You can set and hold boundaries without being rigid, meaning you know when it's necessary to be more rigid and when you can be more lax. The energy gives you courage and motivation, and you can be in grounded, regulated leadership. That's the energy of integrated anger. Our next nervous system state is flight. The energy of the flight state is perseverance. But when it's dysregulated and unintegrated, perseverance energy is anxiety. So dysregulated flight is stuck kind of in the on position, kind of worrying, hypervigilant, keeping yourself really busy, multitasking, being a perfectionist. When that's like a big, big flight response, chaotic emotional outburst, crazy anxiety, overwhelm, OCD, being really rigid, rushing around all the time, panicking, experiencing insomnia. When integrated, perseverance in the nervous system looks like calm determination, knowing when to retreat or disengage from conflict, being grounded in your productivity, having a sense of industriousness, and being able to get stuff done. You need mobilization in your nervous system to do all of that. Yes? Yeah. So is how are you channeling it? How are you channeling anxiety energy? Is it going into like persevering and seeing something through, or is it going into panicking about things you can't control? In relationships, the energy of perseverance gives us what we need to stick it out through hard times and get through conflict and invest the time and energy needed to repair ruptures and repattern in the relationship. We need perseverance to do that. That's a long game process. That is not a quick fix. I'm 23 years in with one relationship, and I can promise you need perseverance. Okay? When not integrated and not met with awareness, the energy of persevering is outside our windows of tolerance. So we can't hold that energy without going into flighty states of busyness and ungrounded productivity, and we can't turn off when we need to. So when we can't hold and integrate flight energy, then we can hurt others with obsessive compulsiveness, being too rigid, or throwing our hot potato of anxiety onto them. When we have unintegrated perseverance, aka anxiety, and judgment about productivity and anxiety, we collapse. We collapse because we are repressing our agency to choose slowness and calm determination to channel that energy where we want it to go instead of what we don't have control over. And if that flight energy and unintegrated perseverance can't be discharged in the service of bringing us back to safety through healthy retreat from danger or using calm determination to stick with something and get through it, we'll collapse into immobilization. Because again, when you have mobilization in your body, whether it's a fight state or a flight state, you are still closer to safety than you are when you're immobilized. When you can hold the charge and channel that energy where you want it to go, it gives you what you need to know when to engage from conf or disengage from conflict that's dangerous or going nowhere, or to disengage from circular conversations. It gives you a spirit of industriousness, a calm confidence in your ability to get things done, right? Like unintegrated perseverance looks like an Energizer bunny who like can't fucking sit down because they're doing all the time. Whereas same energy channeled differently is I'm pacing myself to get through what I need to get through because I have the energy and I need to pace myself to have the energy to do this. There's a difference in calm determination and grounded productivity versus crazy busy body rushing around like a chicken with her head cut off. And you're able to notice and tend to details without becoming overwhelmed, right? If you think about it, if you're in a collapsed state, details are fucking overwhelming, aren't they? But when you're in a state of perseverance or even in a fight state, I would say any state of mobilization, details feel less overwhelming. That is my experience anyway. Like it really, I don't like details when I'm in a burned out, overwhelmed, super tired state. But when I'm like more mobilized, I can handle it. So the energy of perseverance gives us what we need to get through challenges and see them through to completion. Just like if you were running away from a predator in the woods with your flight response, like your body is giving you the energy you need to get away from that predator as fast as possible. But we know we're not being chased by a tiger or a bear, but still, sometimes our challenges are really stressful and we need that energy not to run away from the challenge, but to see the challenge through. So, when we don't meet it with awareness, a dysregulated or hyper aroused flight state with the energy of perseverance is outside of our window of tolerance. Because we can't hold the charge of perseverance without hypervigilance, controlling, micromanaging, it devolves into anxiety. Our freeze state, if you'll remember, this is a combination state. It's a secondary state in the nervous system. It's the activation of the primary sympathetic branch and the primary dorsal vagal branch of the nervous system to create the state of freeze. The primary energy of the state of freeze is judgment. So when you're dysregulated in freeze, you can feel guilt, anxiety, procrastination, gas and brakes feeling, although sometimes that can feel really unintegrated too. Kind of wanting to do something, but you're not really able to move, or you don't really know what to do, just kind of stuck. Unintegrated freeze, big freeze, it's like panic attacks, extreme anxiety, agoraphobia, codependency, suicidality, overwhelm, stuck. You could put functional freeze in there too, I guess, if you like that term. I don't really like that term, but when integrated, the energy of judgment gives us what we need to pause to weigh all options. Take as much time as we need to make grounded decisions, have discernment, be judicious, notice any intuitive resistance that might be present, have a sense of poised readiness and acute awareness. In relationships, the energy of judgment serves to give us discernment and judiciousness. It does have a purpose. We have to slow down in order to carefully weigh all of our options. To feel whatever is right for us or for the relationship or for the situation or whatever, right? We can't make these decisions like hasty, rushed. Isn't it amazing how your body has this state where you've got access to movement when you need it, but you can put the brakes on to like slow down and weigh all of your options to choose which way to go next when you push the gas? The free state is a fucking gift. It's not a horrible, horrible, horrible state if you know what to do with it when you're in it. What you do when you're in a free state, if your body has you in that state, ask your body, what are you slowing me down for that I'm not seeing? What do I need to discern here? What options do I need to weigh? I've got options to weigh. I need to weigh them, and then I can move forward. So, when it's not met with awareness and not integrated, the energy of judgment is outside of our window of tolerance. So, we can't hold that energy of judgment without getting stuck there. And that's when we feel stuck. That's what you think of when you think of a free state. There's an anxiousness in the waiting that is like intolerable. There's like an anxiousness and a fatigue in the waiting. When we have unintegrated judgment, we are stuck between options. What should I choose? I should do this. I should do that. What is the right decision? What am I supposed to do? We stay in this state of exhausted anxiety, tired but wired, which quickly depletes our energy and leads to overwhelm. And if we can't mobilize so that we can make a decision or make a move, then we're likely to stay in this frozen state chronically before eventually collapsing into shame and this like burned out feeling of like, I just can't anymore. When we can hold and channel the energy of judgment, then we have exactly what we need to be able to pause to weigh our options. We have space to notice if there's resistance present. Sometimes what we perceive as freeze is just resistance. There's space to notice that resistance and tune in. There's different kinds of resistance. Not all resistance is the same. Sometimes we fear resistance that's really intuitive, right? And it's your inner knowing that like, nope, that's a no for me. But sometimes we feel resistance that's based in fear. And it's not an intuitive no. It's not an intuitive resistance. It's a like, oh, I can't take that risk. It might not work out for me. Right? That's the fear-based resistance. Oh, what is this going to bring up in me? What if I get left? What if I get judged? Nope, I can't. I'm not an expert yet. I can't be seen yet. Nope, right? That's fear-based resistance. So when you're in a freeze state, if you're experiencing resistance, you're primed and ready to be able to feel into like, okay, what is the story in this resistance? Is this my body being like, I am fucking terrified to do that because it is expansive and it's going to be healing, but I'm just terrified of a change, which is fear-based? Or is it my body going, no, that's not for me. Like, no fear involved. It's just a solid, grounded no. Right? The difference in those two resistances. Also, when a judgment is integrated, there is a sense of poised readiness. I love the word poise. It's like I don't have to be in action all the time. I'm not this human doing thing, but when ready, I can spring into action, right? Like I can kind of be in this just like grounded space of whatever, but like when ready, I'm ready to go. And finally, there is a sense of grounded judiciousness and discernment and a willingness to slow down to come to the right decision. So if you find yourself now or ever again in what you would call a freeze state, I want you to remember this. And I want you to remember that your body has you in that state for a reason. It doesn't mean you've done something wrong. And you can pause because you're in the right energy to do so and discern, like, what do I need here? What are all of my options? And feel into that. What is my resistance? It's not all bad. And finally, the bottom of the ladder, our dorsal vagal activation. This is the state of collapse, and the energy of this state is often shame. So that can look like isolation, frequent short spells of dissociation, boredom, blankness, apathy, zoning out, mindless scrolling, sense of helplessness. And when it's really, really bad, it's severe depression, chronic fatigue, chronic dissociation, being suicidal, just kind of an overall feeling of like, I just can't, I can't, I can't. When we integrate shame, believe it or not, integrated shame is our conscience. Integrated shame, we can be in stillness, peace, presence. Right? We can access that state of stillness. The safety and the immobilization together is stillness. We have access to that state. And shame serves a purpose. It brings us back into integrity. Shame has a, when it's not put on us, when someone isn't shaming us, when it's not unfair, when it's the natural feeling of shame that arises whenever you know you've done something that's like not in your character, it serves a purpose. Like it's your body's way of going, hey, that's not who we are. Right? If you can feel that, you can access peace about it. You can access stillness about it. There's no reason to stay stuck in it and feel like a piece of shit. Like you just notice, oh, I need to come back into my integrity. My conscience is talking to me. That's all shame really is. But you have to be in kind of a stillness to feel it, to see it, to be with it, which is perfect for a collapse. So in relationships, the energy of shame can serve to let us know when we are outside of our integrity, when we have said or done something that is not congruent with our character. As I said, this is not the kind of shame that is unfairly put on us because no one is shaming us. It's the natural feeling that arises when we need to course correct, take accountability, change behavior, and come back into integrity. And when not integrated and not met with awareness, the energy of shame is outside of our window of tolerance. We're not resilient to shame, and we can't hold it without staying completely immobilized or wanting to hide or disappear. So we then live in a state of chronic shame. It ends up permeating all of life. It can lead to unconscious reactions like self-isolation, believing you can't do anything, and believing you're a victim, feeling really unworthy. The body actually produces analgesic chemicals to conserve energy. And chronically, this will lead to being bedridden or having chronic fatigue or chronic pain, which can further increase your shame. And if shame can't be integrated to allow for deep rest or mobilized with safety to bring peace, we stay stuck in this state and our window of tolerance will stay really, really small. So, what does it mean to actually heal your nervous system? Like, what does that actually mean? When you say that you want to heal your nervous system, what you're actually saying is that you've recognized that your nervous system lacks capacity, resiliency, and flexibility. And you're also saying that your window of tolerance is really small. So, capacity, this is the space that the nervous system has to hold stress. That's the bucket. When you have a low capacity, even small stressors can be really overwhelming. The more capacity you have, the more spacious you feel, the more you can hold. So, your window of tolerance is wider. So one way that we can create more capacity in our nervous systems is through feeling our feelings so that they don't get stuck in our body and then create a burden on our nervous system. The more we feel, the less our nervous systems have to carry because those emotions aren't, that energy isn't becoming a burden. Resiliency is the ability to bounce back after stress. So if bouncing back from stress takes a long time or is really difficult, you may have really low resiliency. So even small things can feel really hard to bounce back from. And sometimes collapse is the necessary response for a body which refuses to keep going because it needs deep rest. If you don't choose rest, your body will choose it for you in the form of a collapse, a burnout. And finally, flexibility. This is the nervous system's ability to move easily between safety, mobilization, and immobilization without becoming chronically stuck in one state. So depression is like chronic immobilization. OCD is like chronic flight mobilization. So your nervous system needs flexibility to shift in and out of these different states because it's not like everything is traveling all on one set of wires, right? Like you have the ventral part of your nervous system and you have the dorsal part of your nervous system. And depending on which pathway the message is getting sent down, that's going to determine how the nervous system responds. If your nervous system is inflexible, then too many signals are getting sent to one pathway, to one response, and you don't have the flexibility to have access to other different responses because it's like you have one programmed response. So we need flexibility to be able to access different responses appropriately and proportionately to an actual threat that's in front of us. When you take action steps to build your nervous system's capacity, resiliency, and flexibility, your window of tolerance will naturally expand. Healing does not happen if you're always outside your window of tolerance, and it doesn't happen if you're always inside your window of tolerance. The sweet spot is riding the edge. Just riding the edge and coming back in when needed is the sweet spot. I have a cold plunge training that I put out years ago. Maybe you've seen it. When I first started doing this work, I was really into the phrase, I'm comfortable being uncomfortable. It is great to be comfortable with discomfort. It is necessary to be able to be comfortable with discomfort. But if you are constantly uncomfortable, your body is going to remain in a constant state of alarm. So, yes, it's good to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And also, it's good to be comfortable being comfortable, okay? So that your body can like chill out for a minute and feel safe. If the alarm never gets shut off, the nervous system remains chronically activated or chronically immobilized. That's why it's a good idea to be able to be comfortable. So, being way outside your window of tolerance for an extended period of time leads to the development of chronic and mysterious health symptoms, as we know. And these symptoms are your body's way of being like, hey, I'm not feeling safe. I need to feel comfortable again. It's a little too much. And sometimes when it's really severe, psych meds might be the only option we have to turn down the cries of the body because they can get really, really loud. And I just want you to notice that turn down the volume is the key phrase there, not get rid of, not allow me to ignore, not keep living my life without changing anything. I actually feel really proud of myself for my story with psych meds. I was in an acute crisis. They are great for an acute crisis. I was so hyper aroused that I don't even think freaking horse tranquilizers would have taken me down at that point. Like it was nuts. So I needed, like, in that state, you can't do anything with that. Like, you like therapy doesn't do anything for that. Like, coaching doesn't do anything for that. If somebody came to me and that's the state they were in, I would probably say, please go get seen by a psychiatrist. And once you've been on meds for like 3 months, come back. Like, that's probably what I would say to them because I really do think that sometimes we can be so hyper or hypo aroused that the only thing that can turn the volume down on that and even give us the space to work with it is medication. However you feel about that is fine, but that is actually my experience that it sometimes is the only thing that'll turn it down. Balance is key, right? Your comfort zone is a lovely place. But your growth doesn't happen when you're in your comfort zone. Your rest happens when you're in your comfort zone, but not your growth. And never being in your comfort zone is stressful and will lower your nervous system's resiliency, flexibility, and capacity over time. Because in order to maintain that resiliency, flexibility, and capacity, you need to have periods where you feel really safe. where you're inside your comfort zone. And then you can have periods where you aren't inside your comfort zone. And then that builds the resiliency to start responding and having the capacity and all of that for that stress. But it's a back and forth. It's never like always being in a stressful state and never coming back into your comfort zone. Okay, let's take a wee break and we will come back. Let's come back at, let's see, 13 after. It's 8 after on my clock. So 13 is 5 minutes.